quickly, if you are ready, and Andrew, we can get started. It's 10:57 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are recording this meeting, and I'm going to go ahead and do a roll call. I'll go through the subcommittee members and co-chairs first. So, Clay Coughlin?
Here.
Andrew Guy?
Here.
Niels Andreasen? Jason Bruni, but in place we have?
Emma Pocan, I'm a deputy commissioner at DC.
Welcome. Garrett Boyle. Aaron Whitney. Tim Sandstrom. And then I'll go ahead and read out the names that we see online. If you would just introduce yourself and say who you're with. I see Alva Bryce.
Hi, I'm with Chalista Corporation.
Welcome. Saridi?
She's online, actually. Camera's on with Black and Beach, I believe. Or Michael Baker.
Oh, she's with Michael Baker. Saridi? You're muted.
I'm muted.
This is Sylvia. I'm with Michael Baker International. I'm here to support you, Karen.
Thank you. Ying, Mandy?
Yeah, this is Mandy from Guatemala Beach.
Guatemala Beach, great. Katie Conway?
Hi, I'm with the Denali Commission.
Welcome. And Miranda Strong?
Good morning. Miranda Strong with Chalista.
Okay. Excellent. Clay, would you like me to share that document in terms of topics for consideration, or shall we just dive right in? Clay and Andrew, I guess I should. Clay, I think you're muted. Yeah, sorry, you're muted, Clay.
Oh, I was, sorry. By share it, do you mean distribute it, or just post it so that we can see it?
Post it that so you everyone can see it. Happy to just keep it. Would you like me to share it? Share my screen?
Yeah. Why don't we?
Okay. So we've outlined some topics for consideration for discussion today. Okay, so the purpose and goal of the breakout session is to prepare for the end of the day report out, and that'll be a section of the task force meeting that will take place this afternoon. So we need to be prepared to discuss the outcomes of the recommended discussion topics, which is approximately 10 to 12 minutes, and the progress that we make during this session. And then also to continue to advance and identify and fortify actions that may have merit for inclusion in the final plan. And so Saridi is on the line, and she's going to be assisting on the back end, just taking notes as, in that action task log that has been shared with the subcommittee on SharePoint. But we can move into our discussion topics for this session. And Clay, or Andrew, I can turn it over to you at any time if you guys want to run through these. The first item we thought was a debrief on thoughts on the presentation related to the state energy data and data energy scenario process. Those were the presentations.
Okay, and I think I noticed that several task force members are on multiple subcommittees. So because there's three or four subcommittee meetings being held concurrently right now, that mm-hmm. might be why we, some of the, in fact, I know one of our members is a co-chair on one of the other subcommittees. So that might be why we're a little thin. So Andrew and I think are the only subcommittee members here, but I guess I'd like to welcome outside input on these. Otherwise, Andrew, you and I can just lead on each of these and get share our thoughts. For myself, on the state energy data and data energy scenario process, I think we saw some high-level rail belt data, and you know, primarily for rural Alaska, there has been the power cost equalization data is the one data set that's actually been fairly well maintained over the last few years. So we do have a fairly good data set for rural Alaska, ironically, that we don't have for the Rail Belt and other and non-PCE communities. But I guess my big takeaway this morning is that there are a lot of nuances, and there's a lot of winners and losers, as we heard in some of the comments. You can have two rural communities separated by 20 miles, and one can have a renewable energy resource and a build-out and have relatively low-cost energy in a neighboring community that's, you know, essentially similar on other metrics, can be 100% diesel and have energy costs that are several times as expensive. So I guess my big takeaways are that we do have a fairly good data set for rural Alaska to work with, we have to remember that you can't just look at regional data. You really have to understand that there are winners and losers in this scenario, and that the goal is to try and elevate each and every community to close to 10 cent kilowatt-hour power, not just, you know, the whole region. So those are my comments.
Those are the comments, and I agree with them. I really don't have much else to add to that. Earlier presentation.
Okay.
Why don't we go down to the top five actions or initiatives to consider?
Go ahead and lead off if you'd like to, Andrew.
Well, I think over the last few days I've had an opportunity to review some old studies that have been done. And one was through the NANA Dowell, and the other was through the North Slope and the non-profit kind of rural statewide, what's the name of that company? But they were proposing some really good ideas. I think we need to take a look at those and incorporate many of the items that they had and modern or add to what we do know now and what we'd like to include in our proposal for rural areas.
Was that the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, Andrew?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Were there any that jumped out at you that you saw as good ideas or actionable, or just some general thoughts?
Well, it would depend on you know, the distance and what kind of with new information that we may have, what kind of projects that we can start locally, you know, that can have an impact to more than one or two communities.
Yeah, so regionalization or highlights, we can build economies of scales between communities.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but the main question of those two studies is that connecting the whole state. And, you know, that's an area where I have strong feelings about connecting everybody. You know, we have the rail belt connected over 600 miles, and definitely it's only 400 miles from here. Why isn't Bethel connected? You know, that's the kind of questions that I have.
Yeah, so thank you for pulling up this list. I was actually trying to navigate to it, and it's hard to talk in two gums. So just looking, it seemed like we might have captured this in our first meeting, but economies of scope, okay, that's a little bit different. Anchor tenants is another one, community outreach, transmission and distribution. Let's roll on down. I can't believe we didn't capture this on the first day.
That's okay. That's why we're here. And you can get it in there.
Support AEA. Yeah, I'm still not seeing it. Okay, there it is. Item 10, or well, line 19. Identify opportunities to connect rural communities through transmission lines and other shared projects. I see a lot of green highlighting. What does that mean? Or I was thinking maybe we should highlight this one as maybe one of the top four or five.
Yeah, we can do that. We can highlight that one yellow.
The others I can highlight yellow for now, up for discussion, right?
Okay. He was just reading through them.
Okay.
It was the one on line 19 that I wanted to highlight, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this one is the one that's highlighted, the identified opportunity. Okay.
And that when that says other shared energy projects, we could probably combine some of these up above. But when we say other shared energy projects, that can be a transmission line that's going through to connect larger communities. It can mean an anchor tenant nearby is developing an energy project. But basically, the idea is that we want to get rural off-grid communities connected at every opportunity. Is that right, Andrew?
Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And then maybe we can, so we're kind of at this place in the agenda anyway, where we're consensus building on the top five actions or initiatives, and we have about, if you scroll so clear to the top of here, does it start on line one actually?
Yeah.
Start on 10.
Sorry,
okay. So we've got about 12 of these that we can boil down. So maybe that would be the process that we do, that we kind of try to see if there's some overlap where we can combine some of these or prioritize them or drop them off the list.
That sounds good. Okay. And then we can also note if, you know, further coordination is needed or research is needed for the line items that we do combine.
Exactly. And then, Andrew, you and I can kind of walk through this, but we do have Denali Commission, other Shalista staff online. So if you just want to raise your hands to interject something, please do, and we'll expand our brain trust here in a little bit. Okay, so line 10, expand technical assistance to increase capability and capacity building activities for training a rural energy workforce. I think the action description is great. It's more general than the actual action name. Expand technical expertise to increase capability and capacity for training a rural energy workforce. Okay. That makes sense. So basically, this is saying instead of just bringing technical assistance in, let's kind of start trying to develop some rural energy expertise and capacity.
This is Emma Focon from DEC. Is that a concept that's like maybe parallel to like the training that communities get for running their drinking and wastewater systems, those utility systems, but sort of expand that concept to energy as well?
Is that a question or a suggestion?
Yes, seeking to understand the concept that is explained in the action description.
Yeah, I think I'm not as familiar with the wastewater programs. Have those been successful?
I think that writ large, yes, more for some communities than others.
Mm-hmm. Because I think there have been some good models of in rural Alaska building energy capacity as well. Two or three different models. One, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, Alaska Power and Telephone. They've kind of centralized and created like a consortium of communities and developed an economy of scale where they have centralized expertise and workforce. But then you have rural expertise like the Chinook Winds Group that developed a group of rural workers that can go work on winds farms and several other areas. But I think that this can be that. We absolutely should try to model it off of other successes that we've had. But I don't know. I feel like this could be a top five goal that we try to roll other things into. I mean, it's hard to beat expertise on the ground where the problem is to come up with the best solutions.
We have Katie Conway on the line with her hand up.
Yeah, go ahead, Katie.
Thank you for that. Let me see if I can put that down so I don't forget later. I think there is a tremendous amount of work already being done around the state on the kind of workforce development and training needs around rural energy infrastructure. I think that it would be useful to maybe go down into a little bit more of a granular level of detail to identify exactly what this recommendation is pointing to so we can figure out if that's already being done or if it's a gap in the current kind of landscape of rural energy workforce development and training. I can say that AEA has several really great programs through AvTech with funding from the state and the commission. REAP right now is doing a pretty big statewide effort, kind of a pilot project to test out some new things related to gaps in the training in rural energy infrastructure training needs. And so before recommending something wholesale like this, because there is already this really big body of work being done, there's so much work being done. There's been talk among some of the stakeholders to convene a working group specifically focused on workforce development and training related to rural energy infrastructure, because it's not just the programs that the state has, which are great, but a lot of the federal offices, like the different Department of Energy offices, have training and technical assistance related to long-term operations and maintenance of these facilities. And so I guess that's my long-winded way of saying it would be good to acknowledge or to account for all of the work that's being done before making a recommendation, or maybe in tandem with that recommendation.
Well, that was a good comment, and I agree with it. This is something that, depending on our recommendations for the future, we could have like a sub-priority, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point, Katie, and it kind of spurs another thought. We don't want to duplicate efforts that are already in place. And also, technology platforms are changing, and I think there's 60 hertz and plant automations and things that can help extend technical services to remote areas And so maybe evaluate technical assistance is a better term there in the action name. And to Andrew's point, I could live with this being a maybe a subtask and not one of the lead five.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we can kind of...
Mm-hmm. If I could offer up, Clay, that maybe inventorying the current training and workforce development initiatives around the state by all of the stakeholders in order to identify gaps that are needed to be, that we need to fill.
I like that. Is that okay, Andrew? Maybe take the action name and just change it to assess technical assistance programs.
So I identify it.
Say that again, Andrew. Sorry.
I said I agreed and I liked it.
Great.
So on the main action name on the block to the left, we just have inventory technical assistance programs to identify gaps.
And can I make another suggestion for your consideration? I would not limit it all to technical assistance is a great term, but it's really big. I think that you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the workforce development and training needs for rural infrastructure, and I would recommend including all of those words. It's technical assistance, training, and workforce development. And they're all related, but I don't think it's captured under just technical assistance.
Great.
Hey, thanks, Katie. Now you've been close to a lot of those programs, and we appreciate your help. So maybe we could park that one, and I would suggest identifying anchor tenants to provide economies of scale. I think that's kind of connected to, in a way, to connecting rural communities. So I don't know how we can combine that, but maybe eliminate this, identify anchor tenants, but then take this text here and include it in the in line item 19 below. But we can discuss that before we make that change. But what do you think, Andrew?
What's your number 19?
Number 19, or line 19, is identifying opportunities to connect rural communities.
Yeah, let's add anchor tenants in that language somewhere. But the anchor tenant would be a major reason to get that line out there from the existing area.
Well, and I know you've talked a lot about energy development, Andrew, and actual resource development, and sometimes that changes the value proposition for a regional area. If you have to develop an energy project to for a resource development project, mm-hmm. then it can add value to the communities to provide energy. So it's can be a win-win.
Uh-huh.
So I think I suggested that economy of scopes, but really, that's just thinking holistically. I guess I'm kind of neutral to whether we keep that on the list or not, but the idea is that I think rural communities kind of are forced to do this anyway, but it's when you build a water treatment plant, you kind of have to think about the energy use and costs that are involved. In rural areas, we've gotten a lot better of utilizing excess heat from our diesel plants. And just kind of thinking on a community scale instead of just, let's do an energy project over here in isolation, and let's do a sewer treatment plant upgrade in isolation. But I don't know your thoughts, Andrew, but...
Well, on this one, you know, I'm thinking of like combining energy, fiber, and transportation, you know. If those projects were kind of going through the same area, you know, through the same route, they could share the costs too.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, when I list the three things that have helped our rural community manage our energy costs, one is innovation, and the other is collaboration and partnering. Small organizations kind of have to have partners, and our underground power lines, splitting the cost of installing those between telecommunications companies, water and sewer, whatnot. So.
Somebody has their hand up. I don't know. I can't tell who it is.
Miranda, go ahead.
Miranda.
Thank you. Following up on President Guy's comment about creating efficiencies and economies of scale, I know that's something the task force has been really focused on, and looking at transportation as well as the considerable federal investment into broadband throughout the state, was really impressed to hear that the State Department of Transportation is starting a pilot demonstration project on bundling, and this might be another good avenue to start trying to find a convener of all these different projects. The state's already doing that with the BEAD map for broadband funding, so it would be great if there was some way to create some project management or some resources to help folks coordinate. Thanks.
Andrew, do you think this should be one of our five highlighted ones? I'm kind of feeling like it is.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the reasons why we've had limited infrastructure development to date. Because we haven't really combined projects.
I agree.
You think of the road system, you know. They keep redoing their same road system, maybe move it a little bit, make it a little bit bigger. But they're not doing new, like a bridge with hydropower connected to it, you know.
Exactly.
And you can do that for the same cost.
That's it. You share the cost, just like when you build an overhead power line and you build the transmission up above and the distribution down below and the fiber optic down below that, and you're all sharing the same poles. So let's go ahead and highlight that line 12 yellow is one of the five economies of scale. And it's funny, you reminded me, Miranda, I just had a dream the other night as I was dozing off. We have that Department of Governmental Coordination. It used to be called the Department of Governmental Coordination, that was helped organize all the permits that a project needed. And I thought, what would it look like if you had a government department that actually could pull a bunch of stakeholders together, get them to play nicely and share costs and their share benefits of projects? Okay, conduct community outreach and education to combat NIMBYism.
I think that would be a sub priority that would go along with an actual project.
I think so too. I think it's a really critical part. I know we tried to develop a hydroelectric project, and in retrospect, I wish to this day that we had done a graphic representation of what the dam and storage facility would look like and show the fluctuation, just a simple animated thing and done more community outreach. But there was no opposition, you know, it on the front end, and it happened late in the project. But it's an important element. But I agree, we can kind of park that as a subtask. the invest in transmission and distribution technology solutions to mitigate multiple natural hazards. And I think this is kind of part of what you have to do on any project development is try to design and build it for the conditions. I think there's an element to this, though, that, again, if you're looking at resilience and being able to kind of co-optimize a project for emergency use, then maybe you can pull in FEMA. And this is kind of some thinking like the Department of Defense has to do. Well, I guess I'll just share a thought process here in Cordova. When we have a commercial fishing community, so we have to build dock and port infrastructure, and we're in the process of upgrading those right now. So we're building all this infrastructure that meets our day-to-day business needs, but if we kind of think about how could we use these in an emergency, or how could we design them so that they could be used in an emergency, I think it lends into the resilience that people talk about. Well, yeah, we're developing this deep draft port that can allow bigger fishing vessels to deliver fish here, which is our business case day to day. But we can also have an emergency water barge come to Cordova or take water from Cordova in an emergency. So I guess, again, it's kind of holistic thinking down a different path of building resilient systems that work not only in good conditions, but in poor conditions. And maybe that looks kind of like a subtask to me. Oh, sorry. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. It would go along with an actual project. The planning that goes into an actual project, then you're put into that plan transmission and distribution technology solutions that would mitigate, you know, the hazards. And that depends a lot on the terrain and how far it's going, you know, that kind of stuff.
You know, I'm just going to think out loud. There's so many rural communities doing so many innovative things, and that's why I really miss the Rural Energy Conference. You see a lot of those presentations, but I wish there was a way to catalog and have a really good sharing platform, whether it's some new sensors that one utility is using or creative approach that another one's using. But anyway, I'll just park that, I guess. We can move on here.
On line item 15, number 6, identify innovation and logistics transportation to improve supply chain reliability.
Exactly.
This is an important one to figure out, you know.
What are you thinking there, Andrew? What does this mean to you?
You know, if we're going to be extending out the power and connecting communities, we need to have a handle on how everything will be moving. So this is a very important part of what will be written. I think this should be in the top five.
Yeah, I guess just to throw a loop around this, this can be energy related for parts and materials, people, equipment, supplies around an energy system. It can also be things like even to the extent of corridors for power lines or pipelines or for LNG, truck LNG, for example. In other words, energy and transportation corridors kind of complementing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same is true on the water. There's a lot of, you know, whether it's liquefied natural gas being lighters to communities or transmission corridors for communications and power and then delivery of equipment, materials, fuel, supplies. Yeah, it's hard to separate transportation and energy. So we'd have that as a primary task.
It should be coded green.
Yeah, whatever we're see, let's scroll up for a minute and let's see what else we did with that.
So this first one was coded green.
Yeah.
This one we like we moved to line 19 to include the language there. And then these two we were thinking were subtasks. This one was still under discussion.
Okay, what do we want to do with that one? Economies of scope and a holistic development. I think we wanted to make that a primary task.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's similar to transportation and energy, but it's really on that same vein of marrying all kinds of projects together.
Number three, yeah, and number six should be highlighted in yellow, as well as 10.
Green is the one we're like using for the top priority.
Green.
Oh, okay, green, whatever.
So we got 10, 12, 15, so we got three primary. Supporting the AEA, I kind of feel like that's more of a recommendation to the AEA than one of the key priorities. I do think it's, I think it's important. Do we feel like this is important to recommend?
I agree.
I know the utilities have been talking about it for two decades. Why did we ever stop taking the statewide energy data and that we really need it as a baseline if we're going to try to improve? Identify tools for engaging with opposition. This is kind of related to the NIMBY. So same thing. Yeah, combine them, okay. Combine that with 14. Okay, 18. I kind of feel, back to Katie's comments, I kind of feel like this is a subset of the resources needed in rural communities, whether it's workforce development or technology or asset management. I'm wondering if we could combine this with that that task.
No, I agree with that. Combine
18 with... I think it was 12 up there, maybe.
Workforce development, right? It should be this one.
So we're at 4, identify a funding or financial mechanism. I'd make this the 5th.
I think so, too. It always comes down to money. Show me the money. Sorry, I was just trying to see through things here, but pull up the overall agenda and see how we're doing on time and discussion here.
Oh, yeah, we're doing good. We have till 12:25.
Well, look what you can get done when you have a very small committee.
I know. Sribi, for the highlighted green ones, the priorities in that column B, we could label them yes, and then we could sort, right, and just quickly review what we've selected.
So
column B, priority column, type yes, and
this everybody can see the screen, okay?
Yeah, if you could make it a little bigger, that helps.
Yes, those are the 5. That's
Clay and Andrew, we could review each of these and just determine if further research is needed in terms of like any plans or studies or white papers that the team wants access to, or the subcommittee rather. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, we could maybe just review these in the notes that are associated with them a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking out loud. I mean, you know, thinking about rural Alaska, rural communities, and I know it's been mentioned in other parts of the task force meetings, for example, the fuel tank farms are in, you know, we have like a $1 billion backlog in fuel tank upgrades needed. Now, of course, there might be an opportunity to invest in an alternative or a partial alternative. So maybe if you upgrade those farms, they don't have to be as big. But we haven't really touched on some of the existing needs or mechanisms to or how to include those in the plan as I look through the top 5 priorities. So that was just one thing that kind of jumped out at me. And Maybe we could tack that on to the funding and financing mechanism. Is in the description there, recognize that we have aging infrastructure, energy systems and tank farms. And they pose a large existing capital need.
Not to mention, you know, the weather that's been, that has been forcing some villages to start moving infrastructure and even whole communities.
Well, and that's a good point, Andrew. We've kind of danced around the edge of it, talking about resilient systems and whatnot. But you're talking about climate change or at least climate severity?
Yeah. Like the fall storms that have been hitting rural Alaska?
Yes.
Yeah. They didn't have any, they didn't used to have any effect because of, you know, we'd have frozen water, rivers or the coast. But now they don't freeze, so those storms hit all the way to the villages.
Yeah, and that's again where I wonder sometimes Alaska has pioneered ground freezing technology, and you wonder if there might be some places where some of that ground freezing technology is being used all over the world to, like, contain nuclear groundwater flow at Fukushima and other places. We have some of these technologies that maybe we could look at purposing them a little differently. But, yeah, and of course, that's a huge funding need. Katie, have your hand up.
I do. Thank you. I wanted to add a little bit more and wonder if, Andrew and Clay, you might consider expanding the kind of the way that you're characterizing this priority to be more than just match dollars, but funding period, because the deferred maintenance needs for tank farm facilities across the state currently is not within the realm of anything anyone anywhere can fund wholesale. And the longer we wait to address those deferred maintenance needs, the larger the gap will become between what is fundable and what's needed out there. And the deficiencies in tank farms pose a lot of threats, not just to the community's ability to have enough fuel to run their power plants and provide home heat through the winter, but it also has a potential environmental risk if the facility should, you know, fall into too much of a disrepair. And yeah, just to reiterate it one more time, the deferred maintenance needs on tank farm facilities across the state is humongous. So I don't think it's just needing to have the required match dollars for federal funds, but it's identifying funding in general.
Okay, so maybe we can just chop off the second half of that sentence and just say identify a funding or financing mechanism for rural communities.
Including the required match to federal grants.
Okay, including, there we go. Yeah, then over to the left in the action name, just change to support in the sentence. Change that to including. And delete to support.
Then we also have another hand up from Alva Bryce.
Hi.
Okay.
I was wondering, I'm taking a look at your second item, the identified economies of scope, and I kind of wanted to touch on something Andrew mentioned very early on in the discussion, is that he'd been reviewing a couple of existing plans that had contemplated some of these things, and maybe review, for instance, I'm looking, not to back up here, I'm taking a look at a 2008 Denali Commission funded project that Nana, that Andrew mentioned, that Nana performed. That's kind of a statewide electrification plan. It contemplates renewables. It shows inner tie routes. It also contemplates anchor tenants. I just wonder if you don't add some of these plans. This one was done in 2008. Maybe for update purposes, slide that in there as, hey, take a look at some of the plans that have already been done that may need some updating for modern standards. Maybe you could slide that into that second category, just so we're not reinventing the wheel every time as well. I'm assuming there's numerous studies just like this that are probably stashed away here and there all over. I really like this one because it did, again, it showed southeast, southwest, rail belt, connects everything, and might be worth just taking a look for the overall big picture on.
Alva, do you know if that's included in all the reference studies? There's that big, huge list in the SharePoint that people can access.
This is Miranda. I confirmed with Andrew Jensen, the governor's genetic staffer, and he said it is on the SharePoint.
Okay,
if anyone can't find it, I'm happy to circulate a copy. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm interested in that one. And let's see. If we could... Thank you. If we could pop down to line 20 for just a second, again, in the notes there, let's see.
Katie Conway also has her hand up.
Go ahead, Katie.
So I was on, I can't remember which item it was, and I know you've already scrolled down to address something in line 20, but what we were just on a second ago, it might be worth noting, and I'm sure somebody from the university will bring this up, that the university, ASEP in particular, is currently working on an interconnectivity study to identify the possible routes and cost of kind of wholesale transmission lines.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Katie, while you're on, I know I think you've worked with the Valley Commission. The bulk fuel tank farm, I don't want to understate it or kind of gloss over it in these recommendations, because the tank farm can actually be as big of a larger magnitude investment as the power plants themselves in rural communities. And there's such a huge, like I said, a billion with a B backlog. So I'm wondering if we want to, do we want to try to capture that in the actual one of these titles, or just as like a bold note in the notes, or...
I think from my personal opinion is as long as it's referenced specifically somewhere, it doesn't matter if it's in the header or in the notes, but definitely bulk fuel tank farms should be referenced because it's a very important part of the energy landscape that contributes to the cost to consumers. And, you know, a community, a rural community's ability to store enough fuel to get them through the winter for the power plant and home heat, and keep in mind that heating is roughly two-thirds of what consumers in a rural community pay, most of their costs relate to heat, not electricity. And so the ability to store fuel, to be able to buy it at scale, that I think has some implications for cost.
Yeah, if you just put tank instead of energy, bulk fuel tank farms. Just for Michael Baker and Black & Veatch, many of the communities up north, they can only get one tanker delivery a year. So they have to literally have storage for a full year's community supply of, as Katie said, not only their diesel plant needs, but also their home and business heating needs. So these are quite large farms relative to the community size.
And I can throw one more little, this doesn't even need to go in the notes or anywhere here, but just for the folks from out of state who are unfamiliar, when you have to fly in fuel, the cost goes up exponentially. And we had communities 2 winters ago that had a delivered cost of more than $17 a gallon because it had been flown in.
Wow. And this is also a supply chain issue. Less and less fuel vendors are willing to barge fuel, and the alternative is not good. So, well, thank you for feedback. Miranda and Katie and Alva. I'm very interested in that 2008 study. I didn't realize that was out there. So we've kind of been jumping around a little bit, but I think we've been doing a pretty good job of fleshing these out.
Yeah. And include the 2015 state board study, too. That was the North Slope, Alaska area.
That's the project.
That's the other study. it can be an update review of the 2008 and 2015 plans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to your point, right where you started, Andrew, we've studied a lot of these problems for a long time. Doesn't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. Oh, thank you, Miranda. Alba.
Andrew, I just want to confirm that 2013 study, was that the North Slope gas plant with the DC line running down? Is that what we were contemplating?
Yes,
there?
That's the one.
Yeah, okay, very good.
And sorry, is it Bryce, your first name?
That's my last name.
Okay, I had it right. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah.
Alma?
Yeah, as good as anybody ever has. So you've done a good job there.
Just reading back through these. Well, we've kind of accomplished our task. There's nothing to say that we can't break a little early. Are there other gaps or missing pieces that we need to address?
Just, you know, any open discussion if you wanted to have on additional actions to consider for the plan, but I agree you guys have done a good job fleshing these out. And then just an administrative item. Andrew will not be on this call this afternoon, so Clay, you're good to present to the task force on the five selected.
Yes.
Great.
Let's see.
Thank you, Clay.
You guys, there's something in the chat box here. I just want to double check. Okay, yeah. Rand had mentioned, she had mentioned that. Okay, I think we can adjourn here.
Great.
Okay, all
right. Hey, sorry, just one very quick last question. This is Mandy from Blackburn Beach. I guess just in terms of data access, right now we currently have two fiscal year 2022 PCE statistical reports available. Wondering if we want more years historical data that is in a spreadsheet format, where is the best way to access that? Because we were trying to find information from the AEA website, but they're all in PDF form. Or we can wait for the state data, energy data team to finish compiling their data, but I think their due date is probably end of August, so that does leave us some gap in terms of data availability.
You're with Black and Beach?
Yes, I'm with Black and Beach.
Yeah, I would touch base with the Alaska Energy Authority. They're kind of the custodian of the PCE records. They may have those available in a digital format. If not, the ICER, Institute for Social and Economic Research, or ASEP, may have developed those into ASEP. I would check with Alaska Center for Energy and Power.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, Tim Sandstrom with the Alaska Energy Authority is the AEA representative for this subcommittee, so he can help you find anything in terms of data requests.
Great. That's very helpful. Thanks.
You bet. Anything else for the good of the order? All right. This subcommittee is adjourned. Thank you, Michael Baker, for your support.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.